Third Coast Digest is brought to you in part by 91.7 FM, WMSE Frontier Radio.
Kathy Arney, mm-hmm. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you work with Pathfinders, which is a group which offers shelter and support to young people who are in need.
We have a lot more than that as well. We specialize in working with homeless and runaway youth as well as traumatized youth. So in addition to a youth emergency shelter, mm-hmm. we also have street outreach program that goes out on the streets and really sort of works with the youth who do not want to come into the shelter because they've been on the street for too long. Mm-hmm. And we also have a newly added drop-in center, which is really for those youth who don't either want to go to the shelter or they're over the age of 17. Mm-hmm. And it's ongoing support for them. It's case management for them. It's help them get a job, help them get tutored in school. There's a whole variety to help them get housing. There's a whole variety of services. Or they can come and take a shower and wash their clothes and get a meal and be with in a safe place.
Right.
We also have a mental health clinic, and we have that just specializes in working with youth 25 and under,
mm-hmm.
and a specialized program called Hand in Hand that works with sexually abused children from 6 to age 17, and a Step 5 program that works with youth who have sexually acting out behaviors.
Okay. All right. And you are a
I'm the vice president, sociologist, or? I'm the vice president of clinical services, okay. and I am a clinical social worker by degree and a marriage and family therapist as well.
Well, good. Because what I want to try to explore with you a little bit today is the psychology of domestic abuse, is how it's usually referred to, or spousal abuse, or
intimate partner abuse,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But violence in the home, and which entails violence towards women predominantly, and then the unfortunate byproduct of that is children who witness this kind of violence and to whom it becomes almost part of their language in a way. Can you talk to that a little bit? I mean, do you just speak on that?
Sure. When a child grows up in a home where frustration or crisis that comes up in normal family life, or maybe somebody loses a job, when children witness those kinds of stressors being addressed through violence, they learn that they either become violent or they receive violence.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that every child who witnesses domestic abuse grows up to be an abuser or grows up to be abused, but the statistics are really high that they will, especially young boys.
Right. So if young boys witness their fathers abusing their mother, it becomes that's what they think is the correct way to.
Or it becomes a way that just comes naturally.
Is it, I mean, it seems to me that it's almost a cultural stereotype that a relationship between a man and a woman, an intimate relationship, is a power struggle. I mean, it seems as though we just accept that. In our literature, in our movies, in our television shows, there is always a power struggle. It doesn't have to go to violence, but it often does. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that there are so many societal messages that says violence is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just try to watch something at 9 o'clock at night on television that isn't violent, and it'll be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Movies. Violence is very much accepted part of American life, and lots, and now we're in wars. So three of them now.
Right.
Yes. And so I think that violence is just something we've accepted. And not only that, the gender role training that men and women go through growing up, where it is really okay for girls to be victims and for boys to be perpetrators of some kind, and which really, I think, is a detriment to boys who have been abused themselves either sexually or physically abused, and they can't talk about it, they can't tell anybody about it, and then go on to perhaps act out towards someone else as they grow up.
Right. It's an extremely difficult cycle to break because it is so much a part of our culture.
Yes, it is. And I think there are a lot of reasons why people who are in domestic violence situations don't break the cycle, and there are barriers to breaking the cycle. And a big one is fear. They're afraid of what the abuser will do to them. They're afraid of what their life circumstances will be without the abuser, because maybe the abuser is paying for everything. Maybe they have manipulated the family life so that there are very few outside resources or supports. And so they may be afraid that they will be left with nothing. They'll be alone. They won't be able to support themselves. How will they live? Where will they live if they leave the abuse? So there's a lot of fear.
Right. And there's also shame, I think, too, because at the same time that we sort of teach women to be victims, we also teach them that it's shameful to be a victim, which sort of pushes them back in to the abusive situation.
Yes. And it also could be that the abuser uses shame as part of the manipulation and the control, or that as a child, the woman or the man witnessed shame or experienced shame by witnessing what happened between the caretakers and the family.
Right. Yeah, because it's interesting. I was thinking that when a friend or a woman that you may know is abused physically and starts to, if she can, tell you about it, one of the first questions that comes to mind is, what did you do? And I know that's wrong because that presumes that there was provocation.
Right.
But there isn't.
The abuse becomes part of the dynamic. I would not go as far as to say there's always provocation, because I think most of the time there isn't. It doesn't have to do with the woman who's being battered. It has to do with the man and his cycle of power and control and his inability to know how to have a different way of coping with frustration and anger. And maybe the woman witnessed it in the family that she grew up with. So she's come to sort of expect that that's part of life.
Right.
And maybe it isn't the first abusive relationship she's been in. And so friends become really blaming towards the woman, especially if she doesn't leave right away. And that becomes a real barrier for a woman to take her children and leave because, you know, she's lost her supports.
Right. Where is she going to go? Right, right. Yeah, there is that if she doesn't leave right away, then, well, yeah, you can't understand.
Well,
it's hard to understand.
It becomes, you made your bed, you have to sleep in it.
Right. Yes, this must be part of the conversation you're having.
You
with
must
this
be
person.
Getting something out of this that you would stay.
Right.
So
it's a very it's a hard cycle to break.
It is a very hard cycle.
So we learn to not talk about things. We learn to hit instead from television, from movies, from video games, from our
families, for our own
from
families.
Our families, from everything we come to. And that's what we have to unlearn, is that it's possible to speak about this. Now, the victim, predominantly women who are beaten by men,
predominantly,
comes and needs help, sometimes, first of all, to heal whatever physical wounds and then to heal whatever cycle that she's in. What happens to the men?
Well, the men need help too.
Right.
And there is a really excellent program at the Alma Center. And
Alma, ALMA.
And they really focus on really trying to help the men who are also locked into a cycle.
Right.
And the director there has said that she sees that there is a vast majority of men who are batterers now who have been physically or sexually abused as children.
Right.
And so they have some wounds that are very deep. And, you know, we hear about men act out, women act in, And so you see that. Mm-hmm. So here at Alma Center, they have had a lot of success at helping the men turn their lives around.
Right. But the first thing, as with anything, as with being an alcoholic, as with anything, is you have to say, I am an alcoholic, or you have to say, I have a problem.
Or be court-ordered in.
All right.
Court order in to a program is not always the worst thing, because it really gives you some time. There's some leverage there. You have to come.
Right.
If you don't come, you could be sent to jail.
Yeah. Right.
So that might be some time to connect with the man, to, you know, it's very possible he's never had a trusting relationship before in his life.
Right.
And we're not talking about the batterers who kill their wives. We're talking about sort of chronic batterers that, you know, have been wounded very deeply themselves, that have the opportunity to rehabilitate.
Right. And legally, does it have to come to actual physical abuse before you can, I mean, there are red flags before. I mean, my understanding is that it grows from the message that you're not worthy to pushing somebody around to hitting. I mean, that there is not a direct line from verbal abuse or mental abuse to physical abuse, but it is connected. What are some of the flags that people can look for so that you can know I may have a problem before the handcuffs go on?
Well, there is a whole sort of lead up to an actual physical altercation, where pressure is building, and there's a whole manipulation that occurs as well. So it might take the form of just intense jealousy, so that the woman, that her partner knows where she is at all times and will call and check up on her, and you are late, and where are you, and are you with someone else, and really making a lot of accusations and just sort of stalking her and having to a lot of possession of her. And
the lack of trust. You used the word trust before, but
yes,
a trusting relationship is the hardest.
Yes, the huge lack of trust.
Right.
And then it could be that the batterer will start to manipulate the woman so that she starts to not venture out beyond, you know, his boundary.
Yeah, right.
So she starts to become isolated, and she starts to become distant from friends and family.
You become to feel like a possession.
Yes.
Another way of objectifying.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Or right. And very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And then there may be sort of a trigger that sets everything off into an actual physical altercation. But so there's many steps that lead up to that, and that may take place over the course of weeks and months and years.
So the first step that has to be taken to break this cycle is admitting that you have a problem, as we both said. What other steps are there? What other recognitions do you have to begin to break this cycle, to understand that it's safe to trust?
I think if you're a friend of somebody who is in that situation and they are isolated and they are just very much alone, is to begin giving messages to the friend that they are worthy and they deserve to have a good life.
Right.
And just encouraging messages that you don't have to be in this situation forever. It's really hard. I think that the statistics show that women will leave their batter up to 7 or 8 times before she actually leaves permanently.
Mm-hmm.
So in that period of time, there may be times where she goes to a family's house for a time out.
Right.
She might go to a shelter. She might be badly hurt physically and have to go to a hospital. And so those are the moments where anyone around has the opportunity to give the message.
Right.
And then, you know, to really hang in there and be with her and support her through,
right,
even if she goes back.
And it is puzzling if you go back. I mean, it's puzzling to someone who hasn't experienced it, although I sort of can understand. You go back because at least that is a relationship, even if it's a punishing one.
Yes.
It's a relationship. So I guess what you have to understand is...
there's the punishing relationship aspect of it, and there's also the, you know, the, if there are children involved, that right. children may be used as pawns to have the woman go back, or she may be just concerned that she is unable to take care of the kids by herself. Right. Maybe she's been convinced of that by her batter.
Right. The economic support is there or is presumed to be there, and it's not elsewhere. And in these times, with which are difficult economic times, mm-hmm. I suppose the incidence is even higher.
Yes. And then if you have a situation where it's an elderly woman with a battering husband, it becomes even – there's the fear – of what's going to happen to me. I'm going to grow old
right.
alone, and I don't have anywhere to go. So, you know, very much the batter convinces the victim that they aren't going to be able to make it without him.
Right, right. You need me.
You need me, and it's your fault that I right. hate you.
It's such a crazy dynamic.
Yes.
I mean, and crazy making. And so someone once told me the way to – and this has something to do with the way to make somebody, if you want to bind someone to you for the rest of your life, don't love them quite enough. That has something to do with this.
Interesting.
But mm-hmm. But that the dynamic that you just described is so much tied up with how we think of romantic love and how we think of an intimate relationship. I mean, it seems to me that it's such a deep part of the culture that it's very difficult to recognize and to change the way of thinking. And the problem is that we create, there are children in most of these relationships. They're intimate relationships between married man, married woman, or men and women who live together. And there are often, as you say, there are children who are watching this behavior, learning this behavior, and taking it on.
Are traumatized by it as well.
And traumatized too, sure. If an abuser will not just necessarily just abuse the mother, he'll abuse the child too.
Right, and it may be not just physical battery, but it also may be rape. It might be
right.
Other forms of verbal abuse. I remember one time this woman said that what made her leave is he spit on her.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been beat many times, but he spit on her, and that did it.
That broke, that was a straw,
mm-hmm.
right. Just that physical, that act,
that
which is
act.
So denigrating.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's such a big question and a big issue. And I think, as you said, because of shame and because it's their business, not ours, police will say that it's the most, domestic abuse situations are the ones they want to go into least. They're the most dangerous.
Right.
Because everybody will turn on you.
Right.
And it continues, it goes on because we don't speak up. We don't mm-hmm. say, I mean, if we're on a bus and listen to a man berating his wife or his girlfriend or whatever, we don't know them. So we don't say, hey, stop it
mm-hmm.
or whatever you need to say. And I mean, so it's complicated. So it goes on. But the conversation needs to be had, I think.
Yes, it has to be ongoing.
Right, right. Just, I want to talk about Pathfinders just for a minute as an end note. Do you use volunteers, I suspect, because funding is always...
We use volunteers regardless of funding.
Right.
Because there are people that out there that want to help and they want to give.
Right.
And we have training programs and volunteer opportunities that allow people to come in that want to give to the... to these youth, or
right.
They might have their own personal story that makes them want to give back, or they maybe have time on their hands that
and
they
want to be involved.
They want to be involved in a really good cause,
right.
And so they come.
Right.
So yes, we have a lot of volunteers.
Good.
They do everything from help kids make a meal to sit down and talk with them about what might be on their mind. There's all kinds of volunteer opportunities.
And what's amazing about that situation, just having a conversation and being with, for a child, for a young person especially, who's in an abusive relationship, I suspect that just having a conversation with a person who automatically trusts you, even if they're a stranger. Maybe the one time in a month or a week or a year that they get to actually have that feeling.
I think youth, even if they have been wounded, will really they're young, and so they have some time to heal from some of those wounds. Right. And at the very least, what we can provide is a safe place with safe adults,
right,
who are caring and might not be able to fix everything. But, you know, we really underestimate how important it is to just sit down and listen to a young person without interrupting them, without judgment,
right,
without telling them what to do. It's kind of magical.
Yeah. No,
it's really useful for the youth.
Right. Yeah, no, it's great because they don't. I mean, I'm raising a 16-year-old son myself, and they're not given too many spaces where they have their own voice, where they're encouraged to use their own voice, mm-hmm, and their own sense of themselves. Their steps they have to take, performances they have to give, they have to show up at school, and it's a lot. But especially if you're coming out of a rigid, captive situation where you've been abused or you've been part of an abusive family situation, where you're really frightened and ashamed, to be able to have a conversation, a generous conversation, is vitally important.
Yes, and we're not saying that we're the saviors, you know, because it takes a long time to heal from wounds. Mm-hmm. But we can just be there and be guides and to give feedback that's non-judgmental, to just be a safe person,
right,
that's not going to be violent or abusive is really important.
Right. Yes, bearing witness to whatever another person is going through,
yes,
is very important.
Yeah, and it's an honor.
And great, that's good. It's true. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
For coming in.